rang, startling him from his reverie. Laura? Staring unseeing across the marsh, Sam listened.
Okay. So what is easiest? Shall I come to you? Or would you prefer to come here?
He stood up.
On my way. I'll see you in half an hour.
He drove far too fast to her consulting room and skidded to a halt outside her door.
Sam, thank you so much for coming. I've just been trying to keep my cool while dealing with a new client who's suffering with major difficulties. I'm drained. Come on in.
Indeed, Laura looked grey, exhausted.
Let's go up to my apartment, Sam, she said. I need to get out of here.
Puzzled by this last remark, he allowed her to usher him out again, lock the door, and lead the way upstairs to her living area. He made them tea, and they sat in the lounge.
Tell me what's happened, Sam said gently. From the beginning.
Laura took a deep breath.
Well, it started a couple of nights ago.
As she spoke, all her fears for Jackman and the state he was in poured out of her in a torrent. Her story began with a nightmare and ended with her sweeping shards of china and crushed white petals from the floor.
I can barely face going into my rooms anymore. He's taken what was beautiful and peaceful and poisoned it. He's like a terrible virus, contaminating everything he touches.
Just as he'd intended, Ashcroft had planted in Laura's mind the insidious notion that she might turn out to be responsible for pushing Jackman over the edge.
He's a master manipulator, Laura, Sam said, as we know from before. You must tell Jackman everything, now. You are not protecting him by keeping this awful violation to yourself. You are bowing to Ashcroft's will, playing into his hands. If you say nothing, you are handing control to Ashcroft, and he'll have won.
He took a sip of his tea. And we changed the locks on this place. He clearly had no trouble picking this one, but there are better systems. I know it's a bit like bolting the stable door, but even so.
Laura nodded. I'll do it as soon as I've talked to Jackman.
She let out a long breath.
You are right, Sam. I knew what I ought to do the minute it happened, but he put such believable doubts in your head. It's like mind control.
It is mind control, Laura, and he's very good at it.
Sam could see what lay behind Ashcroft's actions. He craved power. As a child, he had been helpless. Now, as an adult, he was taking his revenge. Sam badly wanted to see that video, but he wasn't about to ask Laura to sit through it a second time. He'd wait until Jackman got here.
Okay, I've procrastinated long enough.
Laura stood up and went to find her phone.
Here goes.
Sam listened. She did remarkably well, considering the state she had been in. Her tone was even. She sounded perfectly calm. Ending the call, she turned to Sam.
He's on his way.
The corners of her mouth lifted.
You know, I actually feel as though a weight has been taken off my shoulders.
Sam returned the smile.
You've seized back control. You've told the truth. You won't have to struggle to keep it from Jackman. In any case, he'd have guessed there was something wrong.
Thank you, Sam. I don't know what I'd do without you.
Laura looked close to tears.
Not everyone is lucky enough to have a friend like you. Someone to pick them up and explain that they aren't as barking mad as they think they are.
Barking mad? Is that accepted psychiatric terminology?
Sam smiled. Like Sam Page, Jackman drove too fast along the Fen lanes. As he went, he fought to retain his new persona, but the image of scarlet blood spreading across a white blouse kept going through his mind. By the time he arrived at Laura's, the determined, energetic Jackman was back in control. He hugged Laura, long and hard, and then he and Sam went downstairs to the consulting room. Jackman went to her computer and found the video Ashcroft had left.
Ready for this, Sam? Oh, yes. I'm going to be very interested to see how he works.
Jackman opened the file. When he finally closed it again, he realized that his jaw had been clamped tight throughout.
I wonder why, when we all know what he looks like, He has chosen to use the darkened silhouette effect, said Sam ruminatively.
I wondered that too, said Jackman. Maybe he's changed his appearance and doesn't want to be recognized, Sam suggested.
That could be the case, but Jackman knew Ashcroft. It could have been done purely for dramatic effect.
He's good, Sam said somberly. For a while there, he had Laura wondering. He put the thought in her head, knowing it would drive a wedge between you. My poor Laura, Jackman whispered. Unconsciously, he had clenched his hands into fists. Where the hell is the bastard? He's everywhere and nowhere.
He turned to Sam.
You know, I wasn't going to get the Sokos in. After all, we know he was here. We have a video to prove it. We also know who he is and a lot about him. There seemed no point. Now I'm thinking differently.
Sam looked at him with interest.
Go on. That plant. He had to buy it somewhere. If we can trace where it came from, we could discover if he has changed his appearance. And you never know. Maybe he left some small trace of himself behind. Forensics might pick up something that would give us a clue as to where he is staying. You know, like plant material, soil or fibres. It's a long shot, but I think it's worth a try. Laura said she's had very few clients here recently. Most of her work has been in hospitals, prisons or the like. Sam pointed to the door. In which case, shall we?
Jackman nodded.
I'll ring this in and get a sweep done. The more I think about it, the more I realise we have to grab any opportunity to nail him.
After he made the call, he went back upstairs. Laura was wondering how she might cleanse the apartment of all traces of Ashcroft's presence. Jackman paused in the doorway. Maybe this was the moment he'd been waiting for. He took a breath and went in. Laura and Sam looked up.
All arranged? Asked Sam.
They are organizing to get someone out ASAP. He looked at Laura.
We have to hang on until they get here. Do you have a lot of work on today?
I've rescheduled the lot.
After that first consultation, I knew I wasn't capable of doing any more today.
Jackman saw how tired and drawn she looked, and his heart went out to her. Ashcroft's deadly mind game had obviously taken its toll. I know you won't mind Sam hearing this, Laura, but there's something I want to say to you.
She tilted her head to one side.
I overheard what you said about the way Ashcroft's ruined this place for you. The thing is, you don't have to worry. The renovations at the mill are all but complete. We can get it decorated, kitted out and get carpeting down in no time. Sell the apartment, get it on the market immediately. I want you to come and live with me, permanently, as my partner. I won't throw the word marriage at you just yet, but damn Ashcroft, he's not going to stop us moving on.
Laura was staring at him as if he'd suddenly sprouted wings. He knew what she was thinking and couldn't suppress a smile. Where was the careworn, haunted man of a few days ago, and what had brought about this transformation?
Sam, meanwhile, was watching the two of them, his slightly bewildered expression slowly clearing.
"You really mean that?"
Laura said.
"Of course I mean it." Jackman turned to Sam. "What do you think?"
"Best thing I've heard all day. I shall treat myself to a little something with dinner tonight and raise a glass to you. Congratulations."
"I think we can do better than that, Sam. Join us. I was going to take Laura to Johnny Bull's when we finish work. Mrs. Maynard is having a day off today and will be too tired to cook. I think we all deserve a meal out."
"It's kind of you to ask, but you don't want some old fogey cramping your style," Sam said.
"Rubbish, please come," Laura added. "Without you, I'd still be paralysed by indecision, trying to find ways of keeping what happened here from Jackman. You saved us from disaster. Besides which, Johnny Bull's does the best home-cooked meals in the county. You can't turn that down."
Sam beamed.
"Well, if you're sure."
Jackman clapped him on the shoulder. "Certain. 7:30. We'll meet you there." He looked at his watch. He really should get back. and he had no idea when forensics would arrive. Sam read his thoughts. If you need to get away, I'm happy to wait here with Laura. I'm going to take you up on that. We're in an uproar over this sniper and the two deaths. He gave Laura a hug. Ring me and let me know about the Sokols, all right? She held him tight. Extra warmth in her embrace, and he didn't want to let go. Reluctantly, he loosened his hold. Then he was driving away. His new, resolute self was holding out. But how long would it last? His jaw jutted. It would damn well hold out until Ashcroft and the bastard sniper were both under lock and key. Chapter 13. The day was fine and sunny, and Marie badly wished that she was on her bike and not inside a 4x4. It would have been great to drive the half hour or so to Hawker's Fen with the warm breeze in her face and the smells of the countryside all around her.
"What crop is that?"
asked Charlie, looking out at the acres of bluish-green plants with white and purple flowers.
"Field beans,"
said Marie. "Almost identical to broad beans, only they are grown for animal feed. They both have the same Latin name."
"Blimey," Charlie said. "The Sarge has gone all agricultural on us, Kev."
She laughed. "Just a useless bit of fen information, courtesy of long evening dog walks with my dad."
"How much further is Hawker's Fen?"
asked Charlie. "There seems to be no end to this road, or that ditch beside it." Charlie was right. Their route lay along one of several stretches of perfectly straight road called droves in the Fenland, with nothing but fields and the occasional dilapidated barn to break the monotony. Here and there were a few scattered dwellings, the sort that estate agents list as rural setting, no near neighbours.
"Just a few minutes. You'll see a flat bridge over the drain that runs directly into the Lorimer's property."
Soon Marie was crossing the bridge into a scrubby, tarmacked area that served as a parking bay. She turned off the engine and looked around. The place had changed little over the years, except for the addition of a couple of shabby static caravans and a few more sheds. It had never been tidy, but now it resembled a junkyard. The house itself was a small, weathered farm dwelling with run-down outbuildings attached to it. Bits of the yard had been fenced off into pens, some for chickens, some with ducks, and others, left unused, were overgrown and choked with weeds.
"Self-sufficient, eh?" Kevin looked disappointed. "I thought it was going to be more, well, like a proper small holding. Nice organic veg and a sign outside saying free-range eggs for sale." "Sorry, Kevin, but this is it. And the only sign you are likely to see is one that says, 'Keep out.'"
Marie made sure the 4x4 was locked.
"Come on, let's go and say hello to Rachel Lorimer."
The front door opened, and a cat streaked out past them.
"Damn and blast, taking me an hour to get that thing in here for its flea treatment. Now the bugger's done a runner. What do you lot want, anyway?"
Rachel Lorimer stood with her hands on her hips and glared at them. She had a wild mane of prematurely grey hair and small, shrewd, pale eyes set in a weathered face. She was dressed in men's cord trousers, a check shirt, a half jacket, and tan leather boots.
"I am DC Marie Evans, and this is DC Charlie Button and PC Kevin Stoner. Could we have a word, please, Mrs. Lorimer?"
They all held up their warrant cards.
"Must be at least a murder to drag three of you out here."
She gave them a disparaging look.
"Are you frightened of going out on your own?"
"Neither, actually," Marie smiled at her. "Don't you remember me, Rachel? My dad and your dad were friends."
Rachel Lorimer peered at her.
"Little Marie? Well, stone me! A policewoman! A detective, no less! Wonders will never cease!"
"Can we come in, Rachel? We won't take long."
"I suppose."
She threw the door fully open and stepped back.
"Come through to the sitting room. It's a bit of a mess, but I don't get a lot of time for housekeeping."
As a matter of fact, compared to the outside, the interior wasn't too bad at all. It was a typical old-style fen home. An open fireplace dominated the room with a faded picture in a worn gilt frame hanging above it, depicting a blacksmith shoeing a horse. There was an ancient well-used sofa and three armchairs, a sideboard, a gate-leg table and a coffee table. Apart from several straggly houseplants and a lot of ornaments, that was it. Rachel Lorimer pointed to the chairs.
I suppose you'll be wanting tea.
We won't trouble you, Rachel. I know you're busy, so we'll just ask you a few questions and be on our way.
Marie sat down and decided to plunge straight in.
There have been one or two petty crimes committed in the area recently, all involving rural village farms. We have been warning the owners of small farms and other properties like yours to keep vigilant.
What kind of crimes?
The shrewd eyes had narrowed to slits.
Theft of animals and diesel, among other things.
Marie stared at her.
And someone told me your family might know something about it.
Marie Evans, how dare you?
Rachel Lorimer was incandescent.
We might not be well off or brainy, but my lads are good boys, every one of them. They've never been in trouble with you lot, as well you know.
I'm sorry, Rachel, but I have to follow up all statements and leads. You can appreciate that, surely. It's not personal, I promise.
Rachel thought for a while.
All right. And it's just because I liked your father, mind. Ask what you need to, then you can go.
Could you tell us, Mrs. Lorimer, are all of your sons still living at home?
Charlie asked politely.
Each and every one. Even Levi, who's married now. They have my bedroom, as it's only right and proper being wed and all.
So there's Levi, Noah, and who else?
Charlie asked.
Jacob, Esther, and Paul.
And that is everyone that lives here?
Asked Kevin.
Only I saw that the static vans have curtains and a gas bottle, and there's an old motorhome parked up in the yard.
Esther has the smaller static to give her some privacy, and Noah and Jacob have the bigger one. This house has only three bedrooms, and it got too cramped for us all.
Her expression darkened.
Anyway, what the hell has that got to do with anything? And who pointed the finger at us?
We can't say, Rachel, but we have to talk to everyone here. Maybe one of them has heard someone talking about the thefts?
Marie's softly spoken response obviously hadn't placated Rachel Lorimer. She continued to glower at them.
And the motorhome? Asked Kevin. Who does that belong to?
My cousin Ezra, growled Rachel. He's down from the north of the county for a while, catching up with a family, and I'd be grateful if you don't give him the impression that we're a brood of thieves and ne'er-do-wells.
Following Marie's lead, Charlie spoke gently.
That's not her intention, I assure you, Mrs. Lorimer. But two of your sons work locally, and they might well have heard something that could assist us.
Before anyone could say any more, a loud crack interrupted them. Kevin jumped.
Never heard an air gun before, have you? That'll be Noah shooting rats. They're everywhere when there's poultry feed and a diet close at hand.
Marie knew that was true. You didn't live in a wet area like this without rats being a problem. But she was reminded of the last time Kevin had heard a gun fired.
Is it just air guns you own, Rachel?
She nodded.
Caleb had a shotgun when I was young, but he sold it when times got hard. The children all have air guns except for Jacob. He doesn't hold with hurting or killing any living thing. Funny ways he has, but that's our Jacob.
There was a distinct softening of her manner when she spoke about Jacob. Marie had noticed that she constantly referred to them as children, though they were all adults, or at least in their late teens. There was another shot. This time Kevin didn't jump.
Are they good shots? He asked casually.
Fair enough. The best by far is Esther. She can knock spots off the boys, bit like me, really. Caleb taught me well, and my mother cooked the best rabbit pie in the world.
The dreamy look in her eyes was soon replaced by one of irritation.
Look, you don't want my family history. Go talk to whoever's here, but I promise you, you're wasting your time. And go easy with Jacob, you hear? He's sensitive.
She stood up and pointed to the door. Marie ushered the others outside, then turned to Rachel.
Thank you, Rachel. It's good to see you again. I'm just sorry it's an official visit.
I liked your father. He was a good man.
He was, Marie said. I still miss him,
As I miss Caleb. You felt safe with him around. Now I have to fill those big shoes of his. It feels a bit lonely sometimes.
I think you're doing an amazing job, Rachel. Can't be easy living out here, having to take care of the family. They have their problems, don't they?
Marie hoped she didn't sound patronizing.
I have my cross to bear, but I love my children no matter how God chose to make them.
A hint of the hardness returned.
So tell those two whippersnappers of yours to tread careful, or they'll have me to answer to.
Rachel Lorimer went back inside and closed the door. Marie caught up with the others.
We'll start with Noah, shall we?
She pointed at a young man who was levelling his air rifle at the far bank of the ditch. They heard a crack, followed by a squeal and a small splash.
Yes!
Noah lowered the gun and looked across the water with a satisfied expression. Then he saw them, and his expression changed. Marie introduced Charlie and Kevin and asked if they could see where he lived.
I suppose, if Ma said it was all right.
Noah must have been around 19 and was gangly with long straggly hair. He seemed defensive.
You don't work, Noah?
Asked Kevin.
I work bloody hard. Here's where I work. Me and Jacob look after the animals and the farm.
He paused.
And I look after Jacob too.
Marie nodded.
We just meant, did you go to work for anyone else, that's all.
There's been some thefts in the area, and we were wondering if you'd heard anything about them.
Why would I? I never leave here, unless it's to shop, or fetch feed for the beasts.
What about friends? Asked Charlie.
Don't have any. Ma says that's for the best. We got each other. We stick together here.
He spoke the words as if he were reciting some oft-repeated slogan. Marie changed tack.
Where does Levi work, Noah?
In the abattoir over at Leedyke. He's good at his job, or so he tells us.
Marie shivered. It wasn't something people usually boasted of being good at.
How does Jacob cope with that?
He doesn't. He hates Levi. He hasn't spoken to him since he took that job.
How long ago was that? She asked.
5 years ago.
Do you like Levi? She asked suddenly.
Yet again, Noah shrugged.
He's my big brother, isn't he?
But do you like him?
I love Jacob. I don't like it when people upset him.
That must be really difficult when you say you all stick together, Charlie said.
Another shrug.
Just the way it is.
Marie looked around the caravan. She had expected it to be a tip, but it was oddly tidy. No piles of dirty clothes or stacks of unwashed dishes, and there was no technology, no television, no PlayStation, no laptop and no chargers plugged in ready for a mobile phone. Instead, there were pictures of wild animals, deer, badgers and foxes, and birds too, owls and hawks. Not a football hero in sight. Marie saw crude wooden carvings, clearly the work of one of the boys, again all animals. There was a kingfisher, a long-haired dog and a sleeping cat. There were jigsaws and books, most intended for children.
Where is Jacob now? Asked Charlie.
With the chickens. One has got mites and is treating it.
And don't ask him anything about whatever it is you want to know, because he doesn't know nothing. He only knows his animals and birds, so leave him alone. He sounded more fearful than anything. Afraid for his brother.
Talk to Levi and Paul if you want answers.
Noah flopped down on an old sofa and stared at the floor. They'd get nothing from him now. Marie nodded to the others and they left. Outside, she led them a short distance away.
Two things. One, what did you smell in that caravan?
Oil. Fuel,
Charlie said immediately.
Faintly. It wasn't strong, but it smelt like I did after my trip to Dewsbrienne Farm.
Exactly. And two? She sighed.
Two, did you notice a sleeveless hoodie hanging on the back of the door?
Kevin nodded.
Grey, with an orange logo. Something stars on it.
Falling stars,
Marie nodded.
It may be a coincidence, and you know how much we hate those, but that hoodie is identical to the one I snatched off the kid who put that wreath on my motorbike. Ashcroft's little messenger.
Neither of the others spoke for a while, and then Charlie said,
"You think one of the Lorimer boys is working for Ashcroft?"
"I have no idea what I think yet, but seeing that hoodie gave me the heebie-jeebies. I checked it out last night, and it's a fairly common supermarket-owned brand, but that style hasn't been around for ages. What's the likelihood of two turning up so close to each other?"
"If it was cheap, it's possible," said Kevin. "And if they're available at the supermarkets..."
"Shall I go back and have a word?"
"Go and ask him about that fuel smell. Then just mention the jacket. Ask if it's his or his brother's. Don't make a big thing of it,"
Marie said. "We should have the forensic report regarding the one I grabbed hold of soon enough." Kevin wasn't long. "He says he always smells of fuel, as he's the one who looks after the tractor and the digger. He wasn't fazed by the question either, and the jacket is his. He said his ma bought it for him. She buys all their clothes. Again, he wasn't nervous or spooked when I asked him."
Feasible, I guess. But I still don't like coincidences."
She looked around.
"Thanks for that. Now you two find Jacob. Go carefully, mind. We've been told he's sensitive. I'll see if Esther is at home."
Esther was not in her caravan. Marie decided to take a wander around and see if she came across her. She didn't remember ever having met any of the Lorimer family apart from Rachel. They had a reputation for being antisocial. They were no respecters of land boundaries, and they did a little poaching. But none of them had ever crossed the line into outright criminality. For them to do so now would not only be wildly out of character, but she suspected that Mother Rachel would heartily disapprove. But then there had been that stink in the static caravan. She wondered if Noah was lying.
"What are you doing here? This is private property."
Startled, Marie looked up and saw a young woman staring accusingly at her. She noted the light brown hair cut in a rather untidy, boyish style, the worn, faded jeans and open-necked denim shirt. What made her look twice was the grey sleeveless hoodie with the Falling Stars logo.
"Esther?
Who wants to know?"
Marie held out her warrant card.
"I'm Marie. I knew your grandfather. Can we talk?"
"What about?"
"Your brothers. I'd like to know whether you think they're capable of theft, among other things."
"Oh, I see. You better come back to my caravan."
She turned on her heel and marched across the yard. Marie followed. She wasn't sure what she was expecting to see in that caravan, but it wasn't this. It wasn't filthy, nor was it piled up to the ceiling with old newspapers and magazines. She didn't have to wade through junk, cat litter and food cartons to find a seat, but even so, the amount of stuff packed into the small space was overpowering. Esther collected things. Keepsakes, souvenirs, ornaments, and surprisingly, books. Not children's books, either. Marie ran her eyes over some of the spines. Steinbeck, Atwood, Hemingway, Capote. No chick lit here.
"Okay. Has someone been accusing my brothers of something?"
She had a lot of her mother's attitude.
"If so, I'd like to know who."
Marie sidestepped the question.
"Esther, do you think your brothers could possibly have been talked into doing something they shouldn't?"
"No way. Our mother would kill them. They'd be too scared to even think of it," she snorted. "Apart from the fact that they aren't bright enough to pull it off, whatever it is. Jacob's useless, Noah's a wimp, Levi's too savvy, and Paul, well, Paul does what he wants, not what other people tell him to."
"The thefts I'm talking about were definitely not carried out by experts, believe me."
Marie watched Esther. What kind of young woman was she dealing with here? People said that all the children had problems, but she couldn't see too much wrong with Esther.
"We've spoken to Noah, and my colleagues are chatting to Jacob. And yes, before you mention it, we do know he's sensitive, okay. But what about Paul? He has a job, hasn't he?"
"Seasonal work on the fields, mainly. But he's good with engines, so he's always got work."
"And you, Esther? What do you do?"
"I help Ma with the house, and I'm good with figures, so I do the accounts and manage the money. What there is of it."
She pulled a face.
I did have a job in retail, but they let me go a couple of months ago. Ma said I was needed here, so here I am.
You don't get lonely? Asked Marie.
Lonely? Esther looked puzzled. With all my family around me, how would I get lonely?
Don't you miss having friends? Marie went on. A boyfriend, maybe?
Are the young women of your own age to talk to?
Most girls are stupid. If I want to talk, I have Gillian. That's Levi's wife. She's nice. Anyway, I prefer to talk to my brothers or Ezra. Especially Ezra. He's different. He was lucky. He got an education.
She uttered the last words reverently.
That's your mother's cousin? Marie asked.
Yes. I wish he'd stay with us, but he'll move on soon. He doesn't hang around too long in one place.
Is he here now? I'd like to meet him, Marie said.
No, sorry. He's taken Ma's car and gone to do a big shop for her. Ezra pays his way, makes sure we all eat well.
Esther had a rather haunted expression.
He's come down from Hull to visit. Says he didn't want to lose touch. Says family is the most important thing.
Your hoodie, Esther. Where did you buy it?
Esther looked down. What? This whole thing? Ma got us all one about a year back. The local supermarket was selling them off for next to nothing. She reckoned every trolley in the store had at least one or two in it. Why?
Nothing. Just thought a sleeveless hoodie was a good idea in the warmer weather.
Wouldn't suit you. You're too posh. Marie laughed.
I've been called a lot of things, Esther, but posh isn't one of them.
Compared to us, you are.
Again, that fleeting, rather sad expression. Marie had a feeling that for all her brave words about family, Esther Lorimer would like to sprout wings and fly away to another life, a million miles from Hawker's Fen.
Chapter 14. Having listened to Jackman's story, Superintendent Ruth Crook sat back and folded her arms.
So he actually gained access to your...
She paused for a moment, unsure of what to call Laura Archer. She knew that she and Jackman were in a relationship, but how serious were they?
Gained access to Laura's apartment and her consulting rooms, as in, he forced an entry?
He did, ma'am. He picked the lock, then proceeded to video himself and downloaded the file onto Laura's laptop.
Is there any way IT can assist with that, Rowan? Could the file be traced back to his phone, or am I being naive?
Ashcroft is too clever for that, ma'am. He used the camera, not his mobile, and downloaded the clip directly from an SDHC card.
Thought I was clutching at straws. Tracing his phone would have been far too easy.
Ruth was starting to feel the pressure. Apart from drafting in several armed units from other forces to help with the threat from the sniper, the chief was already suggesting they request the help of a serious crime squad from HQ, but she was reluctant to do that. She had been here before with Ashcroft, and dearly wanted to see those he had targeted and intimidated for so long have the satisfaction of bringing him down themselves.
I can assign someone to watch Laura if you think it appropriate, Rowan.
Jackman drew in a long breath.
He did say they would soon meet face to face, but I don't think it's Laura who is really in his sights. Yes, by getting to her, he gets to me, but for some reason I believe that in destroying her sanctuary, he has achieved what he set out to do. He has invaded her personal space and infected it with his evil presence. I reckon he'll consider that enough of a victory and will move on.
Suppose Ashcroft becomes angry that she ignored his warning and told you what he'd done, she suggested.
To be honest, Ruth, I think that could earn her his respect. He preys on people's weaknesses, as well we know, and Laura has shown strength in going against him. I believe he'll admire that.
So, shall I get someone to keep an eye on her, or not?
I want to say yes for obvious reasons, but I'm certain he'll move on to someone else now. And uniform are keeping a close eye on all police personnel.
Well, if you're really sure, Jackman.
Ruth made a mental note to make everyone aware that Laura Archer had been singled out for attention by the killer. It wouldn't hurt to have a few more eyes watching her.
And the shooter, Rowan. Are you any further forward regarding him?
Ruth watched him, noting his apparent reluctance to answer.
Hesitantly, he said, "As you know, we are checking all ex-military and police personnel who have known psychological disorders along with expertise with rifles of that sort, but..." Ruth was beginning to grow impatient. "That gun club keeps haunting me. The Fenside gun club belonging to Mr. Kenneth Harcourt, whose own guns were stolen. The second victim was the armourer there for several years. He was killed by the same make of gun that he would have used when he was in the armed forces." Jackman sighed. "I don't understand the links, but they do exist, I'm sure of it." He hesitated again. "Am I being paranoid? Or is it just too much of a coincidence that all this is happening at the exact same time as Ashcroft chooses to suddenly reappear?" Ruth gave him a tight-lipped smile. "Not at all. That's what I have been thinking since day one." Jackman exhaled. "That's a relief. I was beginning to think I was becoming obsessed with him, believing him to be responsible for every single thing that happens. I believe he might have orchestrated all these events to coincide with his return. Don't forget he's a manipulator. He loves to pull the strings. Planting a sniper in our midst and throwing us into turmoil is just the type of scenario he would revel in." Ruth was gratified that Jackman had considered the possibility. It justified her faith in him. "If he used a gopher to deliver that photograph and wreath to Marie's address, he could just as easily hire an assassin, don't you think? We know he's got the money." "I agree. And if it's all right with you, we'll pursue that line of inquiry. If we can track the kid Marie nearly caught and lean on him, we might get some information on where Ashcroft is operating from, and maybe what he looks like now. He could well have changed his appearance, which is why he's been able to move around the town undetected." "Go with that," Ruth said, "and keep me updated every inch of the way." She watched Jackman leave, relieved that he seemed more positive than of late. Ashcroft had the power to destroy those who came under his influence, and she didn't want that happening to Rowan Jackman, or any of those under her command, for that matter. She didn't always show it, in fact she rarely showed any form of emotion, but she was fiercely proud of her officers. It was just not like them to be doing their jobs while looking over their shoulders, fearful of the slightest movement. "Bugger," Marie cursed. They were on their way back to Salton le Fen. "It just dawned on me that I forgot to take a look at Jacob. Check whether it was him that hung the wreath on my tiger. I got so caught up in talking to Esther." Kevin shrugged. "He looked like any other light teen. Scrawny, scruffy hair, kind of fairish light brown, and bad skin. Pity I never got to check his complexion while I was chasing his butt for half a mile," grumbled Marie. "Can't see it being him, Sarge," Charlie said. "He's too simple to even get your address right. All he cares about are animals. I'm betting Ashcroft chose a street kid, one of the streetwise ones."
"Charlie's right, Sarge," said Kevin. "If you talked to him, you'd have seen what we meant."
"I will. We have to go back and see Paul and Levi." Marie had become quite fascinated by this family.
"And I want to meet Cousin Ezra, the clever one," said Charlie.
"Actually, I rang in and had them run a background check on Ezra Lorimer," said Kevin. "I don't think he's that bright, because he's been hauled in for questioning several times by the whole police. No convictions, but he's definitely considered one to watch."
"What kind of crime?" asked Marie.
"Mainly handling stolen goods, and one suggestion of being connected to a small-time fraud scam. Nothing heavy and nothing conclusive."
Kevin stared out of the window at the never-ending fields.
"But if the Lorimers are squeaky clean, they could do without visitations from dubious family members."
"Dead right," said Marie. "Those boys are vulnerable and seem easily open to suggestion, I reckon, wouldn't you?"
She scowled. "Esther mentioned that Ezra always had money and paid his way. So where did he get it from? Ill-gotten gains?"
"Wouldn't surprise me," said Kevin.
"By the way, did you guys get the impression that the family were rather in awe of him?"
Charlie nodded. Marie, too.
"Esther looked quite wistful when she spoke about him. She said she loved talking to him. Maybe we ought to go back at close of play today. What do you think? We should catch the rest of the family if we call around tea time."
I'm going to have to pass on that, Sarge. Kevin pulled a face. I've got a whole load of reports to write up before I leave tonight.
I'm free, Sarge, Charlie said, and I'm more than happy to meet the rest of the family.
Okay, we'll report our findings to Jackman, and aim to get back out there around 6. They were now in Salton. Part of her was scared they were wasting time. Ashcroft was on the loose, along with a gunman. But another part told her she should persist with the Lorimers.
"Can you drop me at the end of the High Street, Sarge?" Kevin asked.
"I'll walk the rest of the way in. There's someone I'd like a word with, and he's generally hanging around that area."
"Of course, but watch your back, Kevin. The super has asked all officers to move around in pairs for safety's sake."
"It's all right, Sarge, I'll be careful."
She pulled into a parking space just before the High Street to let Kevin out.
"Remember, eyes wide open."
He gave her a mock salute, then loped off towards the main shopping area.
"I'm looking forward to him joining us in CID," said Charlie. "He's a good bloke. I like him, don't you, Sarge?"
"I do."
She glanced across at Charlie.
"I'm guessing you're missing having Max around all the time. You two were like Batman and Robin."
Charlie nodded.
"Don't tell him, will you? I wish Max was back full time. We bounced off each other perfectly, and I feel a bit at a loss when he's not here."
Marie smiled.
"I won't say a word, Charlie, and I understand what you mean. Life moves on, I guess, and now he's a dad, he has different priorities."
"I understand. I'm just being selfish, really."
"Maybe Kevin will fill the gap," said Marie. "I get the feeling he'll fit in a treat."
Marie drew into the police station, still mulling over their visit to Rachel Lorimer. She kept hearing Noah say that their mother told them they didn't need friends. They had each other, then almost in the same breath that Jacob hated Levi and didn't speak to him. She thought about her own mother and father, estranged, yes, but still filling her life with love and happiness. And they had encouraged her to make friends. Why would Rachel not want her children to socialize? Was she hiding something in that tiny kingdom of hers? Robbie Melton had been going out with Ella Jarvis for over a year now. It was not too serious. Neither demanded much of the other. They just had fun. Ella was a forensic photographer in the Soco team and a favorite of Professor Wilkinson. Of late, Robbie had been wondering where the relationship was going. Would it ever get more serious? He wasn't exactly sure what he wanted. He was fond of Ella, but did he feel more than that? And if not, what then?
"Any chance of getting an answer any time soon?"
Robbie looked up to see Gary Pritchard staring at him curiously.
"You were well away with the fairies, Robbie."
"Anything I can help with?"
Robbie grinned at his friend.
"Daydreaming, mate. I'm trying to answer the unanswerable."
"Sounds a bit weird, if you don't mind me saying,"
Gary said.
"Now, back to my question. Would you like a coffee?"
"I fancy a tea, actually."
Robbie felt in his pocket.
"And it's my turn. You bought the last round."
He passed a handful of change across his desk.
"And a packet of crisps, please. Any flavour."
Marie and Charlie walked in while Gary was putting their drinks on the desk. Marie went straight to Jackman's office and Charlie flopped into his chair.
"Charlie boy, how did your trip to the Twilight Zone go?"
Robbie called out.
"Interesting. There's this old crow of a matriarch lording it over a rundown farm. A brood of oddballs who incidentally all own rifles, well, with one exception. And a visiting cousin who is under the watchful eye of the Hull police for possible handling of stolen goods. How's that for starters?"
"Anything else?"
Gary asked, smiling.
"As if that's not enough, two of the sons live in their own static. There was a distinct whiff of diesel floating around, and they all own sleeveless hoodies, like the one the Sarge ripped off her running man the other night."
"Blimey!"
Gary's eyes widened.
Robbie frowned.
"They didn't have pigs on this farm, did they, by any chance?"
"Oh yes, pigs, sheep, a couple of cows, chickens, ducks, a donkey, and a beautiful horse. That was the nicest thing I saw in the whole visit."
"What?"
Robbie jumped up.
"Hang on. What kind of horse?"
Charlie shrugged.
"I don't know. It was just a big, handsome horse. Why?"
"There was a horse theft, didn't you hear? A guy called Bullymore
had his best breeding horse stolen last night. I've just got back from talking to him."
He rifled around on his desk and found a photograph.
"Did it look like this?"
He held the picture up.
"Could be."
Charlie squinted at the photo.
"I only caught a glimpse of it, and I don't know a thing about horses. Come to think of it, I don't think that lad Jacob wanted me to see it. He closed the stable door really fast when he saw me taking a butcher's inside."
"I'll bet he bloody did," Robbie growled. "That horse is worth thousands." He made for the door.
"I have to tell the boss about this. Come in."
Charlie got up.
"The sergeant and I were going to go back when the shift finishes. Looks like we have a good reason to now, doesn't it?"
"And I'm coming too. I have a vested interest in getting that horse back to its owner. Bullimore is a friend of Jackman's mother."
They went to Jackman's office. On hearing their story, Jackman said,
"Too much of a coincidence to ignore. I can't see a family like the Lorimers owning a horse of that caliber. Take a picture of it on your phone, Robbie, and send it to Clay Bullimore. If he confirms that it is his, then we'll organise a horse box and get it collected. Have you got his number?"
"Yes, boss."
"Marie, go now. If it is Bullimore's horse, what did you call it, Nimbus? And that boy Jacob realised Charlie had clocked him. They could be moving him out as we speak."
Marie jumped up.
"Charlie, Robbie, with me. Animal Farm, here we come."
As they left his office, Robbie was sure he heard Jackman muttering something about all animals being equal.
Chapter 15.
Rosie was just winding up her search for army personnel who had been retired out on mental health grounds. No one could be placed in Salton or the surrounding area at the time of the shootings. She was now concentrating on Bethany Gadd, a female sharpshooter who had been one of the police force's shining stars. Rosie found the report to be particularly disturbing. Bethany had been a CTSFO, an elite counter-terrorist firearms officer, highly trained and dedicated. She became involved in a controversial police shooting and saw her life and her precious career disintegrate simply for doing her job. The ensuing court case destroyed her. She spent months in and out of psychiatric hospitals and then dropped off the radar. She was the only one of the possible suspects that Rosie just could not locate. Her mobile buzzed. A message from Max. The twins had not improved, in fact they were worse, and Max had made an appointment to see the GP. Thoughts of Bethany Gadd evaporated, and all Rosie could think about was Tim and Jessica. She checked the clock. She had an hour before her shift ended. Rosie chewed on her thumbnail. Could she ask to leave early? It would be the third time she'd done so recently, and it wouldn't look good. Sooner or later, she was going to have to choose between her children and her job, and she had no idea what to do. Rosie texted Max and said she'd meet him at the surgery. She stood up and slowly made her way to Jackman's office. He'd understand, she was sure, but for how much longer? He needed reliable team members, which did not include one who wasn't pulling her weight. She had to decide. Kenneth Harcourt paced up and down the foyer at the Fenside Gun Club. He had made this club into what it was today, a very successful business. From a single range, he had extended to three, with 100-metre and 50-metre ranges, and also a clay shooting layout. He hosted regular competitions in all disciplines and even had facilities for private companies wishing to showcase their products. Along with the social club, it was now a very popular venue. But now, haunted by the ghost of his old armourer, Arthur Barnes, the place that had once been his hobby, where he could indulge his love of guns, was suddenly full of dark secrets. Barnes had been assassinated. There was no other word for it. But why? Surely that scheming, adulterous witch of a wife of his wouldn't have gone so far as to have had him murdered. Would she? Harcourt paced. Worse still, it could be his old gun that had been used to kill his friend. Why the hell hadn't he just deactivated it and hung it on the bloody wall? Suddenly,
Guns had taken on a whole new meaning for Kenneth Harcourt. Every member of his exclusive club had become a potential suspect. Was he a good enough shot? Was she ruthless enough to shoot a human being? Wasn't that man ex-army? Isn't he training to shoot with the British team? What do I really know about that guy? This sniper had to be connected to either him or his club in some way, so perhaps he was the one who could discover who it was. Harcourt called the number the detective had given him. He would offer his help, and mean it. He would do it for the sake of his old friend Arthur Barnes and his own peace of mind. They were on their way to Hawker's Fen. This time Charlie drove while Marie and Robbie discussed the possibilities that the Lorimers were responsible for all the recent thefts.
"It all depends on Nimbus, doesn't it?" said Robbie. "If they stole the horse, then 10 to 1 they nicked the pigs, and the diesel as well."
"And the guns?" asked Marie doubtfully. "They all know how to handle them. Plus, they'd have an axe like the one they used on Harcourt's door and gun cabinet." Marie pictured the massive woodpiles she'd seen in the corner of the yard. "Good point, Robbie, but I'm still convinced that Rachel would never condone theft. If they are responsible, I'm betting they'll be far more scared of her than whatever the law might dish out. Prison might actually seem like the better option."
"Then we're forced to look at one of the working sons or the dubious cousin Ezra?"
asked Charlie.
"Which is why we are here."
If only they hadn't left that grotty farm when they did. The horse was essential to their inquiry, and by now the Lorimer boys would have had plenty of time to make it disappear. Marie leaned forward.
"Foot down, Charlie."
As soon as they arrived, Marie and Robbie went to the front door and informed Rachel Lorimer of what they intended to do.
"I can get a warrant, Rachel, but I don't want to go that route. It would be better if you just allow us to walk around your property and chat to the family members we missed earlier."
Rachel Lorimer finally agreed, although not without treating them to some colourful language and a few barely veiled threats.
"Charlie, the stable, show us where you saw the horse," Marie barked.
They ran over to where Charlie and Kevin had seen Jacob tending to the chickens.
"Over there, Sarge, that old barn, that's where I saw him."
Stepping over horse muck, Marie and Robbie followed Charlie towards the barn. It was empty.
"What do you want?"
They had been indulging in some colourful language of their own.
"Ma don't like to hear words like that. She'll make you wash your mouth out with soap and water."
There stood Jacob, a heavy sack of feed draped over his arm, as casually as if it were made of tissue paper.
"Hello, Jacob," Marie said. "We were looking for the horse that was here earlier. Where is it?"
His eyes narrowed.
"Who wants to know?"
She sighed. This was not going to be easy.
"We do, Jacob. We are the police. Look."
She held out her warrant card, and the others followed suit.
"I am D.S. Marie Evans. I knew your granddad, Caleb."
Jacob eyed the ID card suspiciously.
"I can't read what they say. It could be anything."
Robbie smiled at him.
"We are real coppers, but we're just in plain clothes."
"Show me your whistle and your truncheon, then."
Marie took a different approach.
"Your ma said you were to help us."
"Ah, okay. I moved him to another barn, a nicer one. I wanted him to be happy. He's a lovely animal."
"Good lad. Ma said you'd show him to us," Marie said. "Can we see him, please, Jacob?"
He turned on his heel and walked towards a smaller, newer structure a little further away. A massive chestnut horse stood with its head over the half-door. Immediately it saw Jacob, it gave a little whinny and nuzzled him gently.
"Well, I'm damned," muttered Robbie. "Will you look at that?" "Is it Nimbus?" asked Marie.
"Without a doubt. Here, look at the photo."
He showed her. The markings and the shape were identical.
"Get a picture, Rob, and do as Jackman asked. Send it to Bullimore."
They went into the barn, and while Robbie photographed the horse, Marie turned to Jacob.
"He likes you, doesn't he?"
"I like him too. We're friends."
"What's his name?"
"Trigger."
"Trigger.
Did you name him, Jacob?"
No. It's Uncle Ezra's horse.
Marie tried not to react.
So, did Uncle Ezra bring him with him when he came? Did Trigger gallop along behind the motorhome or sit inside? I can't imagine that, can you?
Jacob giggled.
Of course he didn't. A man stole Trigger, so Noah and me went and got him back.
Oh, right, I see. Well, that's fair enough.
She stared at the horse. You're looking after him nicely, aren't you? He gave her a scathing look.
Where did you learn to care for horses, Jacob?
Didn't learn. They tell you what they need. You just have to look and listen.
Great, thought Marie. A horse whisperer as well. Before she could say anything more, the barn door flew open and Noah crashed in.
Get away from my brother. Don't listen to him. He's not right in the head. Go away.
Calm down, Noah. We're only talking, and your ma gave us permission, Marie said. We're not upsetting him, all right?
Noah looked almost hysterical.
You don't understand. You can't believe what Jacob says. You can't.
Oh, I think we understand all too well, said Robbie quietly. Now, before you scare the horse, I suggest you and I go and have a nice little chat outside. Before he could protest, Robbie had frog-marched him back into the yard.
Is Noah in trouble?
Jacob didn't look particularly worried, just interested. Marie smiled at him.
Maybe. It depends on whether he tells the truth or not, doesn't it?
I always tell the truth, Jacob stated flatly.
Then you won't be in trouble.
He nodded slowly.
That's what Ma says. Tell the truth and shame the devil.
She's right. Now, about the 6 pigs you took from Mr. Beaton's farm. Was that something to do with Uncle Ezra too?
Sort of.
Jacob screwed his face up into a frown.
Uncle heard that they were being ill-treated, so we rescued them. It was for their own good, and now they're really happy. Want to see them?
Later, Jacob. Right now, I'd rather see your uncle.
He's not home yet.
The giant youth's face lit up in a broad smile.
He brings me presents from the town. Yesterday he brought me some sweets that looked like spaceships. They tasted fizzy and I really liked them. Maybe he'll bring me something else tonight.
Maybe, said Marie,
wondering how to tell him that his friend Trigger would not be in his new home for much longer. Most likely Clay Bullimore was already preparing his horse box to fetch his beautiful Nimbus home.
Sarge, Robbie stuck his head back through the door, I've got a sort of confession to all 3/5, horse, pigs and diesel, but not the guns. And you were right, Rachel knows nothing about it. Noah is shitting himself about what she's going to say.
What the hell is this Ezra playing at?
Asked Marie. Supposedly family means everything to him and he wants to keep in touch. Then he turns the kids into young offenders.
Sarge, Charlie Button said, I suggest we talk to Ezra before we confront Rachel Lorimer. He's obviously fed these two young guys a whole stack of lies and I'm wondering why. Maybe there's a valid reason for it.
If there is, I'll be damned if I can think of one, Marie grumbled.
But you're right. No good lighting the blue touch paper under Rachel before we know the facts. Robbie's phone buzzed.
Message from Bullimore. He'll be here in 30 minutes.
Marie gave a sigh. There was no avoiding it. Jacob had to be told.
Jacob, come and sit down with me for a minute.
She led him over to a couple of bales of hay and sat down facing him.
Listen, Jacob. Your lovely horse doesn't really belong to your uncle. The real owner is a man who has lots of horses. He loves his animals very much and takes good care of them. And the horse's name is Nimbus, not Trigger. I don't know why your uncle lied about it, but I'm afraid he did, and Nimbus has to go home to his real owner. He's on his way here now, do you understand?
Jacob stared at the horse.
It was in good condition, I suppose. He hadn't been badly treated. And the place we took him from was clean, smelt nice, fresh hay and leather.
He looked from the horse to her.
Why did Uncle lie?
I don't know. But I'm going to find out, and I'll make sure to let you know, I promise.
Do you think I could visit him? Nimbus. Will the man let me, do you think?
Oh, boy.
how to answer this. You steal his favourite horse and then want visiting rights.
I'll ask him, Jacob, but no promises, okay?
The boy nodded and got to his feet.
I'll get him ready then, and say goodbye.
Good lad.
Marie heaved another sigh, of relief this time.
As a matter of interest, Jacob, wasn't your ma surprised to see a horse here? What did you tell her?
Nothing. Uncle Ezra told her we found it running loose and brought it here for safekeeping while he looked for the owner.
Thank you, Jacob.
Thank heavens for that. At least a sudden arrival of a horse box wouldn't come as too much of a surprise. Leaving Jacob to sort out Nimbus, Marie went back into the yard. When was Ezra coming back? One horse, six pigs, and a couple of cans of diesel. What in hell's name was the man playing at? Well, while they waited, there were two more Lorimer sons to talk to. Levi and Paul.
Chapter 16.
Kevin Stoner didn't find the man he was looking for, so he made his way back to the station. He had a mountain of paperwork to tie up before the move to CID, and Alan was working late tonight. After a couple of hours, Alan called.
How's it going? Kevin asked.
Busy night. Alan was a senior radiographer who, until he met Kevin, had been perfectly happy to work nights. How things change.
Pretty steady, which is good. It makes the time go quicker. Miss you, babe.
Miss you too. And if it's any consolation, I'm working as well. They chatted for a while until Alan was called away. Kevin put his phone on the desk beside him and pulled the last report towards him. Just as he was about to close the file, his phone beeped. Kevin smiled. Alan must be really missing him tonight. He stared at the message on the screen. Kev, can you meet me? I have something for you, and it's big. Please don't tell anyone or bring anyone. Half an hour at the place Barney died. William. It's big. But what William was asking of him was a big thing, too. A directive had gone out to all personnel ordering that while the shooter remained at large, they were not to go out on the streets alone and must always inform control of their whereabouts. By going to the meeting, Kevin would be breaking the rules big time. But if he didn't go, or even if he took a mate, he wouldn't get the info William had for him. Kevin put his jacket on, closed his computer and left the office. No moon tonight. The waste ground was in darkness. He'd walked past earlier today and the place had been deserted. No kids, no bikes, no skateboards and no street dwellers. Following Barney's death, this piece of ground had become truly desolate. A movement. A black cat slunk out from a pile of debris, stared at him for a moment, then sloped off. Kevin began to feel distinctly nervous. He picked his way over to the old storehouse. He was about 200 meters away when the headlights of a car suddenly illuminated the front of the old building. Kevin stood, caught in the light and frozen in place like a rabbit. After a few moments, his heart stopped racing and his vision cleared. A strange scene unfolded, dreamlike, before his eyes. An old fence post, maybe 6 foot high, a leftover from an earlier fenced-off area belonging to the railway. A figure tied to it, wrists and feet secured with thick rope and a white hood over its head. Kevin started forward.
Stay where you are. Move and he dies.
A trap. What an idiot he'd been. He saw the figure moving, trying to get free of its bonds, but there was nothing he could do.
What do you want?
He shouted.
I have a message for D.I. Jackman,
the voice called back. Kevin swallowed.
Tell him not to get sidetracked with his old adversary because I'm just as dangerous, believe me.
Kevin went cold.
And in case you don't, here's the proof.
The crack of a rifle shot, and the man tied to the post slumped forward, held in place by the ropes. In the glare of the headlights, Kevin saw a dark stain spread across the white hood. He dashed forward, filled with a terrible foreboding and careless of his own life.
He stopped in front of the still figure. Slowly he raised a shaking hand and removed the hood.
William! Oh no! Not you, my friend!
He turned and screamed into the black.
You bastard! I'll see you in hell for this!
The lights went out. The waste ground was plunged into darkness, and Kevin heard laughter, followed by an engine starting up, revving and driving away.
You bastard!
This time it came out as a sob. He gently touched the side of William's neck, though he knew his friend had gone. Slowly he pulled out his phone and rang the station. Levi Lorimer looked steadily at Marie, who returned his gaze. Levi was the first to look away. Nevertheless, he made her feel uneasy. The others were oddballs, but at least also open books. Levi's blank expression gave nothing away. She pictured him heaving whole carcasses of meat up onto his muscular shoulders, those small narrow eyes registering nothing. She had engineered it so as to speak with Levi alone. For one thing, she didn't want Rachel hearing what she had to say, and another, Levi was now, nominally, the head of the household. Everyone knew that Rachel was the real power in the family, but Levi was a man.
Your brothers Noah and Jacob could be in serious trouble, Levi. Did you know what they were up to?
Levi shook his head, still impassive.
We might all live here, but we have our own lives. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Theft, Levi.
And if a certain horse breeder chooses to press charges, they'll probably be arrested. Now, she intensified her stare.
I wonder how your mother will feel about that.
An expression flickered for a moment, although Marie couldn't tell what it meant.
Idiots. Morons, the pair of them. They've never done anything this stupid before.
The eyes hardened.
You've got proof it was my brother's.
We have confessions, plus the stolen goods, which are right here on the farm.
Nah, we'll kill 'em. He spoke through gritted teeth. If I don't get to them first.
Before you do that, Levi, it seems your cousin Ezra lied to them in order to get them to commit these crimes.
Now the expression was easy to read. Utter bewilderment.
Ezra? Why?
When he gets home, we'll ask him.
Marie stood up. Towering over her, Levi took hold of her arm.
Please, Sergeant Evans, don't tell Mar until you know what's going on. She'll...
He didn't finish the sentence. He released his grip.
This is terrible for the family. We have to sort it ourselves. My brothers are fools, but they're not bad. If Ezra has corrupted them, I'll wring his damned neck.
I suggest you leave the punishment side of it to us, Levi. We can do it legally. I'd hate to have to cart you away in handcuffs.
Her opinion of him had shifted slightly.